Come to order. Messages from the House.
March 2nd, 2009, from the House of Representatives. Message number 460, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File Number 94, Campaign Finance Reporting Election Periods. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 53, noes 5, excused 2. Message number 459, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 49, Psychologist Licensure. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, excused 2. Message number 461, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 129, Juvenile Justice Amendments. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 7, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. March the 2nd, 2009, from the House of Representatives. Message number 455, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 3, Abandon Mine Reclamation Liens. Ayes 58, excused 2. Senate File 14, State Historic Sites Appropriation. Ayes 58, excused 2. Senate File 34, Beginning Agricultural Producer Finance Authority. Ayes 43, noes 15, excused 2. Senate File 44, Pipeline Inspection and Safety. Ayes 58, excused 2. Senate File 143, Marking Structures That Obstruct Flight. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. And Senate File 102, County Official Salaries. Ayes 37, noes 20, excused 2, conflict 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
The bills on third reading and final passage. Senator Honeycutt.
Mr. Chairman, having voted on the prevailing side, I move for immediate reconsideration of House Bill 46.
The motion is for reconsideration on House Bill 46. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, aye. Bebout, aye. Burns, aye. Case, aye. Coe, aye. Cooper, aye. DeCaria, aye. Dockstader, aye. Esquibel, aye. Geis,
no.
Hastert,
aye.
Honeycutt,
aye.
Jennings,
no.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
no.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
no.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
no.
Vasey,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Hines.
No.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 19 ayes, 11 noes.
Reconsideration vote have passed the Senate. Now we'll have the vote on third and final vote, House Bill 46. Haven't been read three separate times, and the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Meyer?
Aye. Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
No.
Basie?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote?
Anderson,
no to aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 20 ayes, 10 noes.
House Bill 46, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, House Bill 46 have passed the Senate. House Bill 54, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 54, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Workers' Compensation Amendments, an act relating to the Workers' Compensation Act, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are amendments. Reading clerk, read in the First Amendment.
House Bill number 54, third reading amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 7, line 22.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 54. What this amendment does, ladies and gentlemen, is if you go to page 7, line 22, this is the area, the situation would be this, that you have a mom or a father, mom or a dad who's been killed on the job. And you have a child now who is in college. And right now the bill's amended, puts it at age 25. And what this amendment does would reduce that support payment down to 22 years of age. The reason I did this was ultimately, as I think about this, there are lots of other financial incentives and financial assistance available to kids going to school these days. There's been a Hathaway program in for quite a while. There's some additional programs and some additional expansion of some programs that we've seen come through here this year. In this case, when you look at this, it allows you for 4 years from 18 to 22 for that to continue. That just seemed to me adequate. And it's not a big dollar item one way or the other. It's not going to be the end of the world, I believe, one way or the other on whether this amendment goes up or down. But it just seemed to me that when you look at that, it seemed to me that the initial bill had it at 21. Went to 25. This brings it back to 22. That just seems more appropriate to me, and ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, speaking against the amendment, and I think the previous senator was exactly right in that it is not a big dollar item. Specifically, the change that was made by the Joint Interim Committee from the current law of 21 years to 25 years, and how long we're willing to give some support for a child that's in higher education, would have cost $67,000. You move it back to 22, that will reduce the cost to something less than $67,000, but we don't know how much. It's not a big ticket item. Our reasoning in the interim committee was that this part of the death benefits, which are too low currently, one of the major reasons for this bill, and that more and more families, as higher education is taking longer and longer to complete in our complex society, more and more families were providing children with some support all the way up until age 25, and that when you remove some of that support because the breadwinner is killed in an occupational accident, that it's only fair to give them this extra. It does just apply when the child is getting further education. I say child, they're all adults at this point, but principle's the same. So vote it up, vote it down, Mr. President. But that was the reasoning of the Joint Interim Committee.
Ready for the question? Question being third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 54. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Amendment failed. Amendment number 2, reading clerk, please read it in.
House Bill number 54, third reading amendment number 2 to engross copy, page 1, line 2.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, what this amendment does is take out the section of the bill that is being changed with regard to the division of the spoils, if you will, in a lawsuit. Right now, the existing law, which would remain to be the case if this amendment passes, is that there's a three-way division. Basically, the workers' comp division will take a third of the proceeds up to the amount that workers' comp has put out for actual damages, which is only fair because those damages are part of the basis of what the award is. And the old figuring was, well, the cost of the suits will be about a third. There'll be about a third for workers' comp to start repaying workers' comp for what they've put out in the actual damages, and the injured party will get a third. And there'll be a certain rough fairness with that. The testimony we had in the Joint Interim Committee ran along two lines. One is fair is fair if the state's being a freeloader on these suits and not paying its share of the costs. And second, that the costs of these legal actions are going up. Testimony we had upstairs in Committee 10 was that a 40% contingency fee is becoming much more the standard, with 10% then for the costs of expert witnesses and the other costs of the litigation. So take for example, Mr. President, where you've got a $90,000 judgment. The old system, each get $30,000. $30,000 for workers' comp to repay some of the money they'd put out in the case, $30,000 for the attorneys, $30,000 for the injured worker. Under the current system, the testimony was, well, the workers' comp would still get $30,000, the legal system and the attorneys would get $50,000, and there'd be only $10,000 left over for the plaintiffs. And the thinking was, that's not really fair to the plaintiff. Doesn't get much out of it. Now, I will say to you that I think that some of the simpler ones, particularly automobile accidents, where you've got pretty good investigation and have a pretty good idea of who caused what, and some of the simple ones get settled, probably 30% still is an accurate representation of the attorney's fees and the costs. But on the more complex ones, that's not true. With the bill, without the amendment, the system then changes. Workers' comp gets $15,000 of your $90,000. Attorneys get $50,000 again, and the injured worker gets $25,000. So there's much more of an incentive for the injured worker to go to the trouble of the lawsuit, because lawsuits will be quite draining for the plaintiff. You know, you'll have to spend time testifying. You'll have to work on it quite a bit. Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, the reason I bring this amendment is I think that the bill in its current form, with that change where the pro rata share and the workers' comp share gets reduced, is going to result in a lot more litigation in some of the areas where it's a complex issue, particularly things like co-employee liability suits and suits against third-party manufacturers, where you've got a fairly difficult proof. And right now, I think a lot of the injured workers are saying it isn't worth it. And I think with the bill, you'll see a lot more activity in that area. And also, the bill does cost the workers' comp fund. The estimate is $980,000 a year, which shows there is still significant activity in this third-party area. So it will help the fund if we pass the amendment. Mr. President, those are the two issues. I hope I've represented them fairly, but I do think this will result in a big increase in litigation in the workers' comp area. I urge adoption of the amendment.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I'm going to start out by saying this is, using my good colleague's own words, this is only fair. In the cases of third-party litigation, that right now the state gets a free ride, basically. An individual who files a case against a third party has to do so getting his own attorney, paying his share, and paying for the whole case on this. All this amendment is saying, or all this section is saying, is that if the state, by law, receives an amount, they pay that like amount in costs. So if the state receives a third, they pay a third of the cost. If they receive a fifth, they only receive a fifth of the cost. If, you know, and so on and so forth. It's only in the amount represented to the amount that the division receives. And it's like my good colleague said, fair is fair. If they have, they should put some skin in the game with the fact that they're requiring the employee to return some money to them. Now, I just recently had a piece sent down on your desks there, and if you guys can refer to it, please. It talks about the prorated provision is only triggered when an injured worker files a lawsuit against a third party. Now, the testimony we heard is that the fear of the fact that this is going to increase litigation. But the fact is that there's no way of knowing at the beginning of the litigation process what the third party might settle a case for, what the jury might award. You have no idea what the jury is going to award. You have no idea what the outcome is going to be or if there's going to be an award at all. If the injured worker loses the case, there will be no recovery to the worker and no recovery to his attorney and a recovery to the state. The attorney's fees are somewhat fixed. There's a piece on the back here that talks to the contingency fees. And can it be up to 40%? Yes. But there's a wide range of contingency fees. And in no way, shape, or form is this affecting the attorney's fees. The attorney fees are going to remain the same no matter what. There's no incentive to the attorneys to file this or not. As a matter of fact, there's no way of knowing there's no way of knowing at the beginning of the litigation process what percentage the recovery the state is going to take. And it could be a low percentage, or it could be the maximum percentage, which is about a third of the recovery. At the time of the lawsuit, neither the injured worker, his attorney, or the state knows how expensive the case might be to pursue, how long the injured worker will receive compensation benefits, how large the state's lien against any recovery will be. Because there's so many factors into the litigation of a third-party case, it just isn't going to be clear for what I would disagree with my colleague that there's an incentive for an individual in this particular type of situation to incentivize him to file the lawsuit just based on the fact that the division is going to help share the cost. Remember, the division only pays a percentage of what they are going to get. If it's a third, they pay a third of the cost, a fifth of the cost. And the big thing to remember here, there is no incentive for the attorney to file the suit because it changes nothing into what the attorney receives back. The attorney will get their share, whether it be 40%, 25%, 30%, whatever that predetermined amount is, that doesn't change. The only thing that changes is the amount to the injured worker. And remember, members of the Senate, that these are individuals that are at probably one of the worst times of their life. through no fault of their own, injured on the job, and now having to, you know, try and collect some money, and in some manner, you know, the division isn't, we haven't set that up to make an individual whole. But when you work on something like this, you know, that they're only getting back a small amount of money, and they're just saying, division, if you're required to get some money, we're just saying you put a little bit of skin in the game and share the cost. And I would ask you to oppose the amendment.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, on and against the amendment. Folks, this is the way it sort of works. Employee gets injured while on the job. It was the fault of a third party. So under the statute, the employee has the right to sue the third party. Suppose the division paid out $10,000. And so the employee goes to a lawyer. The lawyer takes the case on a contingency. You recover $10,000. The under the old statutes, the division would then walk in and say, we take the whole $10,000. This is what happened in the old days. And you say, well, what about the attorney's fees? He says, no, our lien is for the entire amount of, we have a first lien on the entire amount of our proceeds up to whatever your collection is. And you can do another, that's the way it was. And we changed the statutes because what was happening is lawyers wouldn't take the cases. The state didn't get reimbursed, so the state loses because the state didn't get any action. This was had the same problem with the Medicaid reimbursement statutes. And, you know, when a lawyer takes these cases under contingency, they're working, they want to work for the client and make sure the client gets some reimbursement. They're not out working for the workers' comp. The workers' comp just is the incidental beneficiary of this work. Go the same analysis, you get $13,000 award. The lawyer takes his third. Now you got $10,000. Should the employee get anything? He's the one that hired the counsel, went through. There ought to be something in there. So these pro rata things are fair, and I'd urge you to reject the amendment.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment. Early in my legal career, I defended the fund, is what we called it. That was a Our law firm had a contract with the division that handles these things, and we did all the cases in our part of the country, Natrona County. So from about 1992 to 1996, I did about 100 contested case proceedings in workers' compensation defending the fund. And back then, you had certain individuals. I'm probably listening on the radio right now, but he was in charge of litigation for the department, and that's how they did basically at that point in time, just kind of by rule and regulation, they did what this amendment is taking out. They recognized that there was risk, that there's time and effort and emotional issues in going to trial, and they recognized that, and they played in the game. And they said, okay, fair is fair. We'll share the attorney's fees with you. And in the end, if the claim's big enough, the division still gets made whole. Ultimately, you get that third, and it goes up until they get everything back that they're entitled to if the claim is big enough. But ultimately, that's how they did it for a long time, and then regimes change and things like that happen, and then you ended up where we are now, which is what's been described. And I agree with the senator from over the hill. I think he's exactly right on this, too. There just ends up being no incentive to take these things. In fact, I would suggest to you that leaving the bill the way it is now probably increases litigation, but it will also increase recovery to the Workers' Compensation Division. Leaving the bill the way it is now will also, in my mind, probably also allow litigation to settle more quickly because you don't have to have as big as amount. If everybody can take their fair share and go on, it allows for settlement. But ultimately what you have is if the case is big enough to take, you have to try and hit a home run in order to get the plaintiff anything, because he's going to take time away from work. It's very stressful to go through these things, and it's just too risky, and you end up with it just not being worth the while. So it's one of those things where I think ultimately you end up potentially being penny wise and pound foolish on these deals, and would urge you to resist the amendment.
Senator, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, would urge you to reject this amendment. Ladies and gentlemen, we already, in another part of the statute, give the department the right to do the third-party lawsuit themselves. But they don't do it. They don't do it. They don't take it on. And it's left then to an injured worker and his attorney to do it. So then what happens is the state gets a free ride into this deal. The fact of the matter is that I know somebody right on this floor that got hammered on these attorney's fees things. It's real. I mean, and they're not negotiating with us, folks. And they're not willing to compromise with us. They're not willing to adjust to take into consideration that there are real costs involved in the third-party lawsuit. And they should bear their proportionate share. They are collecting more money back. If we want that fund to be healthy, we shouldn't be encouraging them, if somebody else is at fault, to go ahead and have their day. This is all about responsibility. It's about personal responsibility on the third party, but it's also the responsibility of the government. We should bear our fair share if we're going to get something back from that. I urge you to defeat of this amendment.
Anyone else before the sponsors speak for his second time? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, maybe I can see the handwriting on the wall after all the attorneys in the body speak against me. It is a difficult thing, and it does what the bill without the amendment does, is it decreases the amount that workers' comp gets. Probably about cuts it in half in terms of the recovery that the workers' comp system gets for what it has already laid out to make the injured party whole. It does increase the take of the injured party. The attorneys get paid anyhow. My judgment is that in the complex areas, there will be a significant increase in the litigation, and I think we'll be down here wrestling with the problem again of the co-employee suits. Those are classic ones that are complex to prove, expensive to prove, where you're going to get the kind of contingency and expenses where the legal system takes half of it, both in the attorney's fees and the expenses when you add them together, which is why we've got workers' comp, one of the reasons we've got workers' comp in the first place. That system does not work because it costs so much to get justice that justice isn't done for either side. So I would urge you to adopt the amendment. The current system is working. I think it's a fair division. I think we'll be much better off with less litigation in the society rather than passing the bill as it is, which results in more litigation.
The question is third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 54. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment have failed. Division been called for. All in favor of the amendment, please stand. Those opposed. The amendment had failed. House Bill 54, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe. Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Basie.
Aye.
Von Platen.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote closed, 30 ayes.
House Bill 54, having received affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 54 have passed the Senate. House Bill 146, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 146, sponsored by Representative Stewart, Emergency Medical Services Sustainability Trust, an act relating to emergency medical services, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read the amendment in?
House Bill 146, third reading, amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 7, line 16.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, request that further reading of the amendment be dispensed with, and I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 146 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this is an emergency medical technicians bill that we had here, basically to help the ambulance services in areas where they are hard to get started or in different where they were going under or whatever, to try to give them a hand. This goes into the implementation grant applications process. We had testimony in appropriations that what this implementation grant is it kind of a stopgap or bridge financing, from the standpoint that they get money for a little while until they can actually figure out how to transition into a time when the revenue is expected to be sufficient. And so what I did in this one subsection here, I defined that time. It says, in the current language, it says, on a temporary basis while transitioning to a defined time when revenue is expected to be sufficient to sustain services in the master plan service area. After area, I insert not to exceed 2 years. The testimony basically was that they need that time so they can go out, set up a rural health district, be able to tax themselves and bring the money back in and be self-sufficient from that standpoint, or find other means to do it. There's no other place that I see where the time is actually defined. I think this gives them 2 years. I did talk to the primary sponsor on the bill. He's fine with this. So I would ask for the favorable consideration of tightening this up a little bit.
Ready for the question. Question being Senate third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 146. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion passed. House Bill 146 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas. Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Basie?
Aye.
Von Platen?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed, 27 ayes, 3 noes.
House Bill 146, having received affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate. House Bill 146 have passed the Senate. House Bill 213, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 213, sponsored by Representative Yagi, Rangeland Monitoring, an act relating to conservation districts, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are amendments. Would the reading clerk please read in?
House Bill 213, third reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 4, line 1.
Senator Vasey.
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 213. This amendment basically moves the $500,000 that was in the Senate version back to $300,000. As you track that, page 4, line 1, that deletes the first and the second Senate Standing Committee. That was the $500,000, as you remember. It came over from the House with $400,000, and it's now settled, if this amendment passes, at $300,000. The reason for this being that talking to the groups that are interested in this, and that if this bill passes, it goes into effect immediately. They thought they probably had $300,000 worth of work immediately that they could get done this summer. Come back next time with the budget session, they'd have some information how well it's working and what it's being done. So they thought $300,000 would probably be the better figure than the $500,000. So I would hope in the fiscal responsibility you'd handle this amendment.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, if the sponsor could help me track this through, does this delete that area which the first standing committee amendment, basically they said they didn't want to have it go back into the existing budget and continue on? If we pass this, does that make this $300,000 ongoing funding or not? I'm wondering how that tracks in. Just wanted to make sure everybody was clear of what the amendment did, and if you could clarify that, I'd appreciate it.
Any other questions before the sponsor speak for a second time? Senator Vasey.
Mr. President, if I'm tracking this right, that should still be in there where it's not part of the end. This is a one-time, it has to come back, but... because that's the intent. I thought I tracked it through right, but I... Okay. Well, the intent was that it shouldn't be in the ongoing budget. But I'd hate to propose that. I mean, I looked at it, and it tracks right to me, but...
Question made, third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 213. All in favor? Senator Scott.
Point of order. Mr. President, as this was explained, it does take money out of the budget, so we do need a roll call.
Okay, roll call been requested. The third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 213. Those in favor of the roll call vote.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson, Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie,
aye.
Bonflatern,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing
Vote closed. 30 ayes.
The amendment has passed. House Bill 213, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas? Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Basie?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 24 ayes, 6 noes.
House Bill 213, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 213 has passed the Senate. House Bill 286, third reading of the House bill.
House Bill number 286, sponsored by Representative Qualberg, Federal Natural Resources Policy Account. An act relating to the Federal Natural Resources Policy Account being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Burns.
Senator, I ask that this bill be pulled off the consent list because I wanted to have a little more discussion about it and people reflect a little bit on what we're going to be voting on here. Mr. President, the testimony on this bill was that it basically did was bring conservation districts into the process and that they had some of the expertise that was needed in order to enhance the internal capacity of a state agency. And I'm still not clear as to exactly what in the world that means. And then we changed it in committee to add to the internal expertise of the state, a state agency. I'm still not real clear on that. I don't know what's magic about conservation districts, that they know anything more than any particular state agency in terms of expertise, that it may be a reflection on the state agency itself. But what I'm more concerned about is what it actually does. Right now, we've got 23 counties. We have 34 conservation districts, and as far as I know, none of the conservation districts go over any county lines. They're all within the counties. So, if the conservation district has the governor takes money from the policy account, the Federal Natural Resources Policy Account, in order to, according to the legislation, according to the statute. On behalf of the state of Wyoming local governors to take any of the actions specified in this subsection response to federal land, water, air, mineral, or other natural resource policies which may affect the tax base of the state, wildlife management, state species, recreation, private property rights, water rights, or leasehold rights. Funds may also be expended for preparing or participating in environmental impact statements or environmental assessments, including analysis of economic or social and natural or physical environmental effects on the human environment. So the way it works right now, from my understanding, is either the city or the county, the state agency or the county can apply to the governor for these funds to do this. What this bill does is now adds 34 additional conservation districts that can now apply to the governor. My question is, what happens when the conservation district applies to the county first and the county says no? The conservation district, if this legislation passes, can now leapfrog over the county commission and go straight to the governor. And I think what we're doing here is setting up a confrontation between the conservation district and the county commission. If you cannot convince your own county commission that this is worthwhile, why in the world would we pass something like this? The other problem I have with it is that currently on second reading, there is another bill that asks the Attorney General to investigate and possibly sue the federal government over NEPA and the Environmental Species Act. And that also cites the Federal Natural Resources Policy Account, which currently has about a million and a quarter in it. So anybody who thinks this is a good idea and wants to vote for it, just keep in mind that we're more than doubling the applicants to the governor for this, and odds are it's probably going to be applications or requests for additional appropriations to this fund. So I want everybody to have their eyes open when they go into this.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. And my colleague from Sheridan County, I had some discussions on this bill many years ago, and some of the same concerns were back then, although it did not include the conservation districts. And I would submit to this body that we've had some success with this program relative to what it's all about. And what it's all about, members of the Senate, is to allow the local districts, and before now the counties, county commissioners, to participate in the cooperating agency area of federal land management. And they're able to go into these meetings, participate, and be at the table, which is huge. You talk about 34 conservation districts. That number is correct, but you're asking and assuming that all of them will participate. The areas where we're having issues relative to cooperating agency status is where we have a huge amount of federal and public lands, and we're involved in that cooperating agency discussion. That discussion does not occur in the eastern part of the state or the southeastern part of the state. It's primarily in the western part of the state, in 5 or 6 counties, 7 or 8 counties, possibly a little bit in the northeastern part of the state where the Black Hills National Forest is. So you won't see all of them being able to do it. And you talk about the conflicting nature between the commissioners and the districts. These districts have a unique ability when they come to these cooperating agency status meetings. We've talked about the benefits they've done in watershed areas in the past. They're not competing with each other. They're working together. And all this bill does, or what this bill attempts to try to do, is when they come to the table with all the expertise they bring, is to allow them, if they so see fit, to go to the governor and ask for some funding for what they do. So they're working together. They're not competing with each other. And the whole purpose of this, once again, is to allow local people, and by the way, these conservation district boards are elected, to allow local elected boards, both the conservation district and the county commissioners, to have a seat at that table when they talk to federal land people making policies about federal lands that have a huge impact on our state in all these areas we talked about. It's about agriculture. It's about multiple use. It's about everything that just was mentioned in the status. And they have to go to the governor and ask for the funding. Now, if we all of a sudden have run away, maybe we're making some progress, but this body still controls the purse strings by how much they appropriate. Because $1.2 million, I'm not sure we've had an appropriation for a long period of time. A process that has worked in a few areas, I hopefully will be more involved and work more, because this really is an area that helps our state and federal land management. I would ask that you support the bill.
Mr. Majority, floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I won't take a lot of time. I simply wanted to say probably all the same things that the good senator from Fremont County has said. And I would say, as having been a past member of a conservation district, which are, in fact, as been said, they are elected. They are comprised of many people that are out there practicing conservation practices every day along with an urban member. And if you believe truly in local control, local participation, grassroots, this is the way you get it. You go to those boards that work with these issues every day. I, too, would urge your favorable support of this bill.
Senator Burns, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the way it works right now is if there is an issue with the conservation district, they go to the county commissioners and get cooperation from the county commission in asking the governor for these funds. And there's that, and this language that keeps being stated about seat at the table. The county commissioners can bring the members of the conservation district with them. They have access with the county commissioners. If you can convince your county commissioners this is a good cause right now, then they can ask the governor. Right now, what we're going to be doing is we're opening up this avenue of requests to the governor for funding from these conservation districts. Yes, conservation districts are elected boards, but they're elected from the number of acres or the type of properties that they pick ahead of time. They decide to form a conservation district, and so basically electing themselves to tax themselves to do what they want to do. And in some cases, conservation districts have very few members living in those districts, and they are the beneficiary of those districts themselves. And there's nothing wrong with that. I have absolutely nothing against conservation districts. But I think we should be quite careful if we're going to start opening up the avenue to get state funding from them or for them to request state funding from any particular governor.
Question is, House Bill 286 having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
No.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
no.
Townsend,
aye.
Vasey,
aye.
Bonflatern,
aye.
President Hines,
aye.
Closing vote, closing vote closed, 24 ayes, 6 noes.
House Bill 286, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 286 have passed the Senate. House Bill 295, third reading of the bill.
House Bill number 295, sponsored by Representative Simpson, Western States Energy and Environment Symposium. And Act relating to the Western State Energy and Environment Symposium, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. I asked for this one to be pulled off to just think about what we're going to do. And I really don't know how I'm going to vote and how many times I'm going to change my vote on the second chance. But what we're doing is we're saying let's have this symposium. Sounds like a really good idea. Let's get 13 states to come in with us and come up with policy. Even better idea. Let's not be picky about where we do it. We can do it in Colorado or Salt Lake or whatever. But then we limit our time period. You've heard from the senator from the Big Mountains. You've heard from my colleague from Natrona County. And I do this myself in putting these, not like this, but putting trade shows and symposiums together. And it takes a long time of lots of work. And we really have kind of crunched this down. So what I would ask, if we pass this, and we probably should, and I'll probably vote for it, but who's ever on the steering committee, really stay focused, really stay on that person that you hired to be the coordinator, and don't let them have a single day off or take a breath or whatever else they want to do until everybody's invited. All the guys are paid for to come visit with us, because right now we're putting our schedules together for our interim topic committee meetings, and we have a hard time figuring out when can we get enough time for 15 people to be in the same room, and we have conflict after conflict, and now you're going to take that out to 13 states and try to bring enough people to make a good, sound idea on policy together. And I would just say, when we pass it, let's really stay on this steering committee and really make sure that the energy school stays on it every day and we keep up every day on it. And make this look like one of the crown jewels that Wyoming thought up and put forward rather than that $500,000 disaster.
Senator Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I probably agree with most of what's been said. The only reason we extended the date on it is it may not be possible to put one on in this period of time. As was mentioned, you've got to secure the place to have it. You've got to see if there's rooms. You've got to see if all that conference stuff. And I don't want to get there with have it a an inability to put it together in the first time frame that was on there. The time frame has been extended. I think it's an excellent idea, but if it can't be done this summer sometime, we still, I think, need to do it, maybe spring, maybe even winter, I don't know. But that's why we extended the time. I agree with the good senator from Natrona County that we need, whoever is on the steering committee, and there's going to be a lot of work, they got to stay after it. I think it's a great idea. I think particularly with what we're hearing now that is going to happen to some of our revenues relative to minerals and one thing another and energy. So I think it's a great idea. I hope you support the bill, but I totally agree. Whoever's going to do that has really got to stay on it. I hope you vote aye.
House Bill 295, substitute number one, having been read three separate times. The question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geist?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross? Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 25 ayes, 5 noes.
House Bill 295, substitute number one, having received affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 295 had passed the Senate. House Bill 301, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 301, sponsored by Representative Lockhart, Wyoming Industry Partnership Act 2, an act relating to the administration of government. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, thank you very much. Mr. President, this is a bill to create a grant program within the Department of Workforce Services. The state assistance required under this program is $1 million for the first year and $875,000 the second year, and afterwards it's supposed to go away. You know, it's a good program. It does have a... It's a good program, Mr. President, in the sense that it does require industry to put up half the money. But, Mr. President, I do have to question its constitutionality, and I just cite Article 3, Section 36, which is prohibited appropriations. No appropriation shall be made for charitable, industrial, educational, or benevolent purposes to any person, corporation, or community not under the absolute control of the state. You've heard that one before, Mr. Chairman. And Article 16... Section 6, loan of credit, donations prohibited, works of internal improvement. And basically this is the one that says neither the state or any other government entity shall invest or provide payments in any program. Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, I would question the constitutionality. I know we get around this many, many ways, but you have to take a stand sometime. And it does not fall under Amendment 4, which requires a two-thirds vote for funds to go there, for money to go to private economic development activities. It's not a local tax situation where a sales tax is voted on by the people and used for economic purposes. So I don't believe this is constitutional, and I ask you to vote no.
Senator Larson.
There is no appropriation here that's going to anybody. If you look at the bill very closely, it enables them to set up a program that if there is money available at some time in the future, I don't know that there will be money available, but it's a very easy method if, in fact, there is even some stimulus money. There is no appropriation in this bill. It enables them to set up a program and puts the rules in place. It does not require those grants. There's no money to fund it. It's to let them set up a program if we find, as we have over the past years, that finding employees and training employees is a very important thing to the state of Wyoming. There is no money in this bill. It just allows them to set up the program. And I would submit to you that I think it could be very much more important, if things go the way they seem to be going, both nationally and perhaps on a state level. So there's no money in it as we speak. There may be some stimulus money come in, or next appropriation period, after full review by both the committee and this body, there could be an appropriation made. At this time, there is none, and I think it's a good program that they can set the rules up in the meantime and try to see if it can be a valuable program, and I'd ask you to vote aye.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I can see where the constitutional objection is coming from when there is money here. If you look at page 4, line 18, we're establishing, and I presume this hasn't been modified by an amendment, we're establishing a competitive grant program established by the department to provide support to industry partnerships. That does seem to be to violate 16.6 potentially. Mr. President, I think what you'll find is when they do the rules that the Attorney General is going to tell them it has to be a contract rather than a grant, because the basic service, which is training, is something we clearly can do. So it's unfortunate the objection didn't come till clear at the end of third reading when we can't with a simple amendment solve it. But I think the better part of wisdom is to go ahead and pass the bill. I think the AG, when they do the rules, will make them take care of the problem, even though we should have written it that way ourselves. We may have to come back in the future when there is money, particularly if it's state money, and change that particular word. But on balance, I think the better part of wisdom at this point is to go ahead and pass it. And let them deal with that and the rules, and then if they identify a real problem, we may have to come back here and change the statute.
Senator Case, for your second time.
Mr. President, the fact that these are future funds doesn't change the constitutionality one iota. You can't pass a bill contingent on future funds that are state funds and then call it constitutional down the line. And I'm not persuaded by the fact that we can unwrite everything with contracts. And, Mr. President, these are grants to private firms. They benefit the private firms. And, yes, there's no money in it now. But even in the bill, it uses the term grants. And on page 5, line 21, it uses the term state assistance. Mr. President, we can't do that.
House Bill 301 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
No.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
No.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
No.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions? Townsend.
Aye.
Vasey.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
No.
Burns, aye to no.
Martin, aye to no.
Martin, aye to no. Anderson, aye to no.
Bebout,
aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 9 ayes, 21 noes.
House Bill 301, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 301 have failed to pass the Senate. House Joint Resolution Number 7, third reading of the bill.
House Joint Resolution Number 7, sponsored by Representative Brechtel, U.S. Constitutional Convention repeal. A joint resolution to repeal requests made to Congress to call a convention for the purpose of proposing amendments to the Constitution of the United States, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Case.
President, thank you very much. Mr. President, I can understand why we think we have to pass this piece of legislation. You know, this legislation is about numerous calls for a constitutional convention that the state of Wyoming, this legislature, has done in the past. The calls for constitutional amendment conventions start in 1939, and I think the last one, I believe, is in 1979. Mr. President, if you look at the reasons for each and every one of these, you might quibble with some of them, I suppose. But on the main, I think that every one of the members of this body would agree that we had a legitimate beef and that we asked the federal government to renew the partnership envisioned in the Constitution with the state, the sovereign states, of which we are, of course, one. Mr. President, I'm not sure that anything's changed that called for any one of these resolutions to be suggested and that a constitutional amendment occur, or a constitutional convention occur for this purpose. I have heard the good senator from Teton County say on numerous times that the resolutions we send to the United States Congress aren't worth the paper they're printed on. And he is absolutely right. Because we write them a bickering resolution that says we don't agree with this or we don't agree with that. It doesn't matter. I have sat here on this floor and had our good representatives from the Senate and from the Congress sit there and tell us what a frustrating environment it is and how they're steamrolled by the environment and that how the states get the short end of the stick in that and how they wish Congress would follow the rule, the reforms, and have, for example, bills with one subject. We've heard that numerous times by our good congressional delegation. It's evident to me that they can't reform from the inside. It's evident to me that the Constitution, we the people, who are the people that created the Constitution? They were embodied in the state governments, the 13 colonies that got together. And the Constitution was established, and 9 colonies ratified that Constitution, or 9 states at that time. Mr. President, this is no different. Don't fear a runaway Constitution. Don't fear it. Besides the fact that every one of these propositions is limited, look at the plain language of the Constitution itself. Do you know if there is a constitutional convention? And let's say Katie bar the door, the liberals in Washington take over, and it's the worst thing you can imagine, Mr. President. All the excesses of the current liberal regime, my apologies to the minority party, I'm being a little extra dramatic here for effect, but just imagine it's the worst that some of you conservatives can imagine. So what? Who ratifies the Constitution that comes, the proposed Constitution that comes out of that convention? Mr. President, the states do. 3/4 of the states are required for ratification. 3/4. Is that 37 or 38? I can't do the math right now, Mr. President, but they have to ratify it. Come on now. Wouldn't it be a really good thing? You'd want to talk about resolutions that have effect. Not the paper trash that we've sent and the good senator from Teton County has talked about. Calling for a constitutional convention by the very entities that create the federal government puts us back in the driver's seat. We have nothing to fear. This, and if you decide you don't like some of these resolutions that we passed in the past, bring one to specifically do those. Don't say, we're now going to roll over, rescind all our calls for a convention, and have no leverage whatsoever on the federal government because we're afraid of what can happen. Mr. President, listen to what this thing says. It's garbage. It says, whereas a constitutional convention called and convened for any purpose could result in a complete rewriting of the United States Constitution with no rules or precedent whatsoever to follow. Not true. It can't happen without the ratification of three-quarters of the state. Do you think that's going to be crazy? No, three-quarters of the state, three-quarters of the bodies, just like ours. Whereas the convening of a constitutional convention during these troubled times presents a clear and present danger to our established system of judgment, give me a break. We need to rein in the federal government. Three-quarters of the state have to approve what happens. Whereas these clear and present dangers far outweigh any possible benefits of convening a constitutional convention. Is there anybody here? Did somebody say time?
Yes.
Mr. President, sorry I didn't hear you. Mr. President, thank you very much.
Senator Burns.
Well, Mr. President, no, that's all it took. I would have yelled that about 5 minutes ago. Mr. President, this particular resolution, I will again quote our good former president from Teton County. This one, for a change, actually does something. And it does something very important. And I am happy that that my colleague and friend to my right, has such security about the idea of a constitutional convention. I do not share that security. Some of the questions raised, and I think legitimate questions raised, if there is a constitutional convention, first of all, is representation. What sort of representation would be at a constitutional convention? It's not mentioned in Article 5. Is it done by representation in Congress? Or would they just make it purely, by population? So Wyoming would get maybe one, or Wyoming and Montana might even combine to get one or something. The other question is, who decides that? Who even decides what the representation would be for a constitutional convention? One of the things that's in the Constitution that's being questioned over the last 8 years or so that we've seen, or 10 years or so, has been the Electoral College itself. That's the first thing I think they would get rid of. But the scariest thing to me is the fact that the Constitution was born in a locked room where they were actually supposed to be amending the Articles of Confederation. They trashed that and came out with a Constitution. I think we were lucky that they came out with a Constitution. But I think we'd be pressing our luck to think that a better document's going to come out of that room than what we currently have right now. And as far as the ratification by three-quarters of the states, we're talking a constitutional convention. We're talking about the DNA of government. One of the first things that constitutional convention could get rid of would be the ratification by three-quarters of the states. That could happen. The first thing they could do in a constitutional convention would be to get rid of Article 5. I don't know if that would happen. I don't know if it would not happen. As far as the items, the various reasons that the constitutional conventions have been called for in the 9 times it's been called for, I agree with most of them, except Court of the Union. I still don't know what in the world that is. I knew about 10 years ago and somebody told me and I've forgotten and I've tried to Google it and I can't. Yeah, if we want to have a constitutional convention, let's go ahead and pass it ourselves. But 1979 was the last time we had it, so that's 30 years now. So let's wipe the slate clean instead of being logged on as one of the states that calls for a constitutional convention. I got a letter at the request of the chairman of Minerals Committee. I got a letter from the Attorney General as to the idea of whether or not a state can even rescind it. And there's contention over that. And it's been, I guess, the majority of the constitutional experts that says, yes, a state can rescind it. But there is a question whether we can or not, because it's not mentioned in Article 5 of the Constitution. It's about convening one. It's not about rescinding it. But I'd say let's play the odds against a hunch and pass this resolution. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, the question is, what's a court of the union? My understanding was that the idea there was that the chief justices of all 50 states would meet as a court and be able to overrule the Supreme Court. Frankly, I think, and I was here when the last one of these was done, and it was a bad idea. And I think as we've got a better understanding of economics, we're starting to understand it was a bad idea. But the Court of the Union is a good example of the kind of things that are here. And maybe if the whereas is it said, whereas some of these calls are not well thought out and would be unfortunate, I don't think we have to worry near as much about the runaway possibilities as we do about the fact that some of the things we've called for are not very well thought out and don't any longer accord with the problems we have in our modern times. And I'm very reluctant to tamper with the most successful governing document in the history of mankind. And I would urge our adoption of this particular measure rescinding these calls.
Senator Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe I have to stand because I've been quoting, been quoted more than Abraham Lincoln. Let me assure you, I wasn't there when this document was prepared. Mr. President, I am going to support this. I think it's kind of important that we not, for some of the reasons that were already given by the senator from rural Natrona County. I don't know what would happen. Do I have the ultimate faith it would be the right thing? I don't. But I just want to remind the body, you do what in your mind you think is the right thing. It does, as I understand, Mr. President, take a two-thirds vote. And I did say that this is the only resolution I've seen that actually does something. All the rest of them are feel good, express some kind of political viewpoint one way or the other. This one actually does create an action. A good action, a bad action, that's up to you. Vote it the way you think. But I think it is important because some of the things that were in there are not what I think maybe we want today. Some of them are. But I, for one, do not have the confidence the way our governments, irrespective of parties or irrespective of anything, has been acting in the last few years that they'd come up with answers that would be an improvement on, as was mentioned, the most significant document in history. So I would ask you to support it, but just vote the way you feel. Vote the way you feel. If you have the confidence that all the people going back there are going to do the things that you want them to do, then don't vote for it. I don't have that confidence, and that's why I am supporting it.
Senator Jennings.
Just one other thing you ought to think about. We've talked about what we've put in over the years on the different times that my colleague was here and saw him come in. Questions come in and resolutions to have it. Do we have any idea what the other states put in? Have we looked at that list? I don't know what it is, but would if we brought that list of all the other states and all the other requests, would we agree with any of them, part of them? So I would say let's support the resolution, wipe the slate clean. If we want to do it, then let's call for another one.
Senator Case, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you very much. Mr. President, if we don't like some of the things we've asked for, let's rescind those. Don't anybody stay here and say that a constitution will or the convention will produce a constitution that goes into effect without ratification by the three quarters of the state. It's not true. It's hyperbole. Article 5 says that when you call a constitutional convention, The results of that constitutional convention have to be ratified by the states, by three quarters. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or, on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds in the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid in all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution, here's the key point, Mr. President, when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states. It does go on. There's one other method. Three-quarters of the states can propose a convention within the states. But both those are, you can't do it. Whatever document is not automatically the Constitution or the amended Constitution, it has to be ratified by the three-quarters of the states. They're just like us. The states created the federal government. This is the only mechanism by which the states can influence the structure of the federal government. Mr. President, are you really happy with the way the federal government has evolved at the expense of the states?
Okay, the House Joint Resolution is a resolution. It is not a constitutional amendment, so it does not require a two-thirds vote, a simple majority. Are you ready for the question? House Joint Resolution number 7, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
No.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
No.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
No.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Vasey.
No.
Bonflatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 25 ayes, 5 noes.
House Joint Resolution number 7, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, House Joint Resolution number 7 have passed the Senate. Considerations of bills in general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business, consideration of bills in general file. You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Dockstader.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill 298. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 298, sponsored by Representative Helenan, Medical Practice Acts Revision, an act relating to the Medical Practice Acts. It was referred to Committee Number 10. Labor, Health, and Social Services reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Will the reading clerk read the amendment?
House Bill number 298, Standing Committee Amendment number 1, to engrossed copy, page 10, line 23.
Senator Scott.
Chairman, I move adopt the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, what the Standing Committee Amendment does, first, it corrects the statutory citation where we got a little, the gross bill is a little too detailed. That was brought to a suggestion of the Legislative Service Office. Then it goes in where you talk about some of these volunteer positions where they can practice with the low income
people. And says it can be done in a medical practice rather than in a nonprofit institution. Purpose of that is in some of the smaller communities, that's the practical place if you have a retired physician who's treating the indigent. They don't have the volume to justify a full nonprofit volunteer clinic. This is the practical way to do that in the small towns. And that's what it does. I'd be happy to answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Question on the amendment? Ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 298, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The amendment is passed. Back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, before I yield to the prime sponsor for a brief explanation, let me say that what went wrong here, and I apologize to the Senate for it, there was a provision in here that we were aware of and aware that it was a worthwhile thing to do, but did not understand the significance of it related to foreign medical graduates. There was a technical problem there on the licensing of them. And frankly, we knew that the bill corrected the problem, but we didn't know how significant the problem was, so we didn't make a special effort to talk to the majority leader and warn him that the bill needed to come up. And that's something I should have caught that in committee, and it didn't. And I apologize for the Senate, but I think it's wise that we do take this step, because it turns out if we don't pass this bill, there will be fairly horrendous consequences for our efforts to recruit adequate number of physicians for Wyoming and for our family practice residency centers. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to yield to the sponsor of the bill for an explanation of the bill.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank the chairman of our Labor and Health Committee as well, and also the leadership for taking a look at this particular proposed legislation. It's a good piece of legislation, and I will do the best I can to walk you through relatively quickly. It's a sizable bill. There's a lot to House Bill 298, but most important, it's a very important update to the statutes that deal with our licensing of our physicians and physicians' assistants. It's a very important provision to take care of the licensing issue you have just heard about regarding physicians who attended medical school outside the United States and Canada. That's a critical portion of this bill, and I will point that out specifically here in just a moment. It also does a number of other things, including moving us into a new century with regard to telemedicine. And I think that's critical for you to understand. Also, I would call your attention to a sheet that, with the help of the Board of Medicine, I think they did a terrific job of helping me to show you exactly what is in this Medical Practice Act revision. If you would take a look in your bin, I hope that you have one of these pink sheets. You will notice that this piece of legislation contains four main categories which deal with the licensing of our physicians. Number one, we're streamlining, we're enhancing access to our providers, and we're facilitating, as I mentioned, telemedicine, which, of course, is becoming more and more prevalent as technology comes into play. It's especially important to a state like Wyoming, in the rural parts of our state. Number two, we're protecting the public. I think you'll find in this piece of legislation some very important things in that regard. Number three, we're expanding our board representation, providing for a little bit of compensation for those board members who take time off. We know all about that as you travel around the state. That board representation is very important. I'll tell you why in just a few minutes. Number four, we also improve those board operations, and we correct and clarify some statutory provisions. I commend to you this this pink sheet on House Bill 298. I think it does an excellent job of explaining some of the things that we do in this piece of legislation. Let me just say, as a point of information before I walk you into the bill real quickly, that the Board of Medicine presently does not have the legal authority to issue licenses to physicians who attended medical school outside the United States and Canada. That came to light over this past year as the Board of Medicine, in consultation with a lot of people in our state, as they came together to work on this Medical Practice Act revision, it quite frankly came to light that that the board does need to do something about that. 25% of our doctors licensed in the past 2 years who are actively practicing in our state right now are foreign medical graduates, one out of every four. So that is a very important thing. Let's go to the bill real quickly. What I'm going to do is pick some provisions that I think are of particular interest and import to you, and would be happy to try to come back if you have questions on any other things therein. If you move to page three, I would point out to you that this is a provision which permits law enforcement agencies to provide criminal history records to the Board of Medicine, criminal histories and licensees who are being investigated. If you move on down on page three, it permits the Board of Medicine to require fingerprinting of applicants who appear to have criminal histories and licensees who are being investigated. That's just background check material. You move on through definitions begin on page four. There are some minor adjustments to those definitions. We can come back to those if you have any questions in that regard. If you move over to page six, I wanted to point out that is exactly where we're talking about. Outside the United States and Canada, that's the accrediting agency. If you look on pages or lines 6 and 7 on page 6, that's the ECFMG. That adds the definition for the only entity which approves foreign medical grads for licensure. If you move on down the page, you'll notice telemedicine. That's where we bring in that particular definition. That uses a developing national definition of rapidly growing practice model, which will expand healthcare accessibility, especially in our rural areas. If you move on over to page 8, that's where we deal with that change in the board that I alluded to. The board has 8 members, including 2 lay members, and a quorum requires 5 members. Each disciplinary case has 2 board members as petitioners, leaving only 6 to hear the cases. This provision allows the appointment of temporary members by the governor to provide a quorum if several board members are disqualified from hearing a case. That's important because if one of those doctors is involved, for example, that's why you see a pretty lengthy description, page 8, page 9. You have to have 5 members plus a lay member. That just allows the board to make sure that they're going to have a quorum. Moving on over to page 10, at the bottom, if you look at Romanet 14, authorizes the board to seek criminal histories on applicants and licensees. I'm going to move right quickly through page 11. If you look on pages or lines 14 and 15, authorizes rules for a rapidly growing practice model used particularly in rural areas. Again, a reference to telemedicine. Walking on through, if you look on page 12, allows the members of the board to receive the same salary as legislators. That's that compensation issue that I alluded to in the introduction. If I can walk you over to page 14, this is a critical piece of language that we bring in there with regard to foreign medical grads. The critical change takes place on lines 7 through 10, allows licensure of physicians educated in medical schools outside the United States and Canada. If you move over to page 15, there's some language on lines 4 through 6, allows the board to adopt rules limiting the number of attempts and years for completion of licensing tests. That's the changes in the licensing. On down the page, it allows for adoption of rules that make licensure easier and faster, especially for telemedicine, rather than requiring all of our applicants to come to Wyoming for a 15-minute interview. Heretofore, we've required all of those applicants to come to Wyoming. That's not necessary in this day and age. At the bottom of the page, we replace a confusing loophole for applicants who have been disciplined in other states. This makes those applicants eligible to apply, but the board retains the authority to deny a license if appropriate under the circumstances. On the next page, this provision D replaces confusing loophole for applicants who have been disciplined by one or more hospitals, makes those applicants eligible to apply, but again, the board retains the authority to deny that license if appropriate in certain circumstances. Over on page 17, if you go down to line 19, that's a critical change that allows the licensure of physicians educated in medical schools outside the United States and Canada. On the next page, there's some significant change in paragraph E and paragraph F. Replaces confusing language for applicants who have been disciplined in other states. I'm moving rather quickly, but again, if you'd like to come back to a page, I'd be happy to do that a little bit later. Moving on through the rest of the bill, there really are not any major red flags. There's some changes, some conforming language. Over on page 24, I commend to you that particular paragraph on page 24, lines 9 through 14. That is an attempt to make sure that there's a match between the physician and the physician assistant. Allows the Board of Medicine to ensure that compatibility with regard to practice specialty. And so I wanted to point that out to you. Over on page 25, again, some conversation there. This particular provision, the current statutory language is unclear and it's difficult to administer. This is going to allow the board to take a look at physicians' assistants. Right now, we limit that number to 3. This language allows the board to take a look at that given any particular circumstance. Ladies and gentlemen, there's some other provisions that are changed in there, but nothing of any great consequence until you get to page 29. I do want to call to your attention on line 16, page 29, we repeal some confusing language on the ineligibility of physicians disciplined in other states. Immediate effective date will correct our current inability to license our foreign medical graduate and other barriers to prompt licensure. And again, that's a very quick run-through of a very big piece of legislation, but I do want to take a moment to thank those who worked very hard this past year on this legislation. It was a little late coming to our Labor and Health Committee. That's why it is not a Labor and Health bill, but I will say that the Medical Society has signed off on this. The Physicians Assistance Organization has also signed off. There's been a lot of work gone in. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'd make two observations. One, I looked through this very carefully. I can't find any fencing in it. There's some ability to deal with individuals that have specific problems that make them dangerous. That's not really fencing. There's the business of making sure the physician assistants are matched up with the doctor in the right specialty. I don't think that's a problem. Mr. Chairman, there is, however, on page 25, they are overturning a recent enactment of ours with regard to the number of physician assistants that a doctor can supervise. We passed that bill because the Board of Medicine would not allow more than two. So we passed that bill, pushing it up to, they couldn't allow, they had to allow at least three unless there was good cause not to. Mr. Chairman, I will advise there's a second reading amendment being prepared. We don't quite have the language exactly right just yet, but there will be a second reading amendment that will essentially restore the old law in that regard, because I think that is an important issue that this legislature has spoken on recently. Mr. Chairman, other than that, I would commend the bill as being a very well done piece of work and urge you to adopt it.
Further discussion on the bill? Senator Bebound.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just two questions, and if you don't have the answers today, if you get them for me, please, because I think this, too, is a good bill. Page 14, line 10, when we talk about the medical school outside our country, and I've been around some of the medical schools, won't mention where they were, which countries, certainly not even close to the kind of training and expertise and importance that we place on licensing a physician in this country. Just maybe some comments about, and maybe the fact that it's certified by ECFMG, and maybe some comfort level there. I'm just a little concerned about that. The second point, Mr. Chairman, page 26, lines 6 through 12, I want to be sure that we're not putting any kind of language in that if someone fails to simply send in a timely application to renew their license and it doesn't get there for whatever reason by December 31st, that either a doctor or a physician assistant would lose their license and have to go through a complete reapplication process. I don't think that's the case. I just want to be sure.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to find, is this a question? The pink sheet of which you handed out says that it removes the requirement for a majority vote to issue a license. And I'm wondering why you'd want to do that. It would seem to me that you could, if that's the case, one member of the board could approve and four not, and we issue a license to somebody that perhaps maybe we shouldn't be issuing a license to, and it would seem to me that you'd still want to have a majority vote to make sure that that is that we're getting competent people.
Further discussion? Senator Landon.
Chairman, with regard to the questions by my good friend from Fremont County, I too had some reservations there with regard to page 14 and the licensing of foreign graduates. I will say this, that in the little bit of study I've been able to do, I know that many of those schools have caught up a long, long way, and I've also been given assurances that our Board of Medicine is going to take that under consideration and be pretty critical in that review. But I promise to get more information for the body on that. With regard to page 26, the question on all licenses, I believe that was where your question was, Senator, on the terms of the license. And the new language, completing and submitting a renewal application form published by the board and renewal fee prior to expiration of the current license, December 31st date. I'll need to check with the board on that, and I'll get back to you on it. And the good senator from Laramie County, I'll have to find that specific provision, and I'll get back to you as well on that.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, with regard to that provision is found on page 14 at line 5, and what they're doing is requiring a majority of the board, and the effect, as I understand it, of removing that is that you can do it with a majority of the members that are present at the board meeting. You don't have to have a majority of the board, so if you have one or two members absent, you can still get things done. I don't think it's a big item. If you don't like it, it's on page 14, line 5, and that's what they're doing there. You know, they're, with a majority of the board, it's like our majority of members elected provision, and they're wanting to be able to do it with a simple majority of the people that are actually at the meeting.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank the Chairman of the Labor and Health Committee. He's exactly right. That is page 14. And the Board of Medicine is receiving over 200 applications per year now. And that's simply an effort to streamline as best they can. And that is exactly the purpose, is to try to streamline and get that going.
Further discussion on the bill? Ready for the question? Question. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 298, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. House Bill 298 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report, and further I would move also, in addition to that motion, that the Senate not hear any more bills on the Committee of the Whole for this session.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion carried.
Reading clerk, read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 298, do pass amended. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Senator Dockstader.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion passed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate recess until 4:05 for 15 minutes.
Okay. You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We are recessed till 5 minutes after 4. Thank you. Senate will come back to order. Messages from the House.
March the 2nd, 2009, from the House of Representatives. Message number 465, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate Joint Resolution number 4, Black-Tailed Prairie Dog, aye 34, noes 24, excuse 2. March 2nd, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 466, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill number 262, Very Rare and Uncommon Areas, ayes 41, noes 17, excuse 2. March the 2nd, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 467, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill 114, Community Colleges Amendments. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 1, noes 57, excuse 2. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. March the 2nd, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 464. Concurrence requested, Mr. President, Senate file 107, Court Supervised Treatment Programs Act. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 53, noes 5, excuse 2. The House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. March 2nd, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 468. Conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 47. The House conferees are Representative McComey, Chairman, Representatives Harshman and Teeters. Message number 469, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1, Mr. President. The Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 84. The House conferees are Representative Buchanan, Chairman, Representative Stubson, and Throne. Message number 470, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1, Mr. President. The Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 114. The House conferees are Representative McComey, Chairman, Representatives Patton and Quarlberg, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Joint Conference Committee's report. Message number 366, Senator Mumflatoran, are you ready for that message?
Yes, I am, Mr. Senator.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
Joint Conference Committee report, House Bill number 190, Driver's License Suspension Child Support, reference Senate message number 366, signing for the House of Representatives, Representative Throne Chairman, Representatives Bonner and Gingery. Signing for the Senate, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman, Senators DeCarrier and Perkins.
Senator Von Flatern.
Mr. President, I move Senate message number 366, Driver's License Suspension, Child Support, House Bill 190. What they did was they deleted our original amendment to it, and the biggest part, other than a couple little corrections on this, our amendment went into page 3, lines 15, 16, and 17, where it talked about having a $5,000 balance and not having made a payment for 90 days. So their argument was that it didn't say consecutive 90 days. Their thoughts were that we couldn't, what 90 days, could somebody actually pull 45 days out from this month and 45 days from a month later or 2 months later? So what they did was deleted all our amendment, then they put back everything we had amended except for that line. They wanted to go back to the original verbiage, which says, not made a child support payment either voluntarily or through income withholding for a period of at least 90 consecutive days prior to the determination. So they wanted their language put back in. Our intention was it just set a balance of 90 days of $5,000. Any 90 days that they have a balance of $5,000, that it would trigger this particular legislation. It's fine. It comes out with the same language. I just thought that somebody could make a payment on day 89, wait 89 more days, make another payment, and it wouldn't trigger this. The reasoning from the department, which I talked to, also said was somebody's gaming this system like that. We will eventually spot it. We'll come back for a change. But the department's fine with it. I'm fine with it. I ask that you do concur with this and vote aye.
The motion is that you do adopt the Joint Conference Committee report, number 1, reference to message 366, House Bill 190, and that you vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
No.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquibel? Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Basie?
No.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 20 ayes, 10 noes.
By your vote, you have adopted the Joint Conference Committee report on message 366, reference to House Bill 190. Concurrences? Senator Jennings, are you ready on message 460?
Yes, Mr. President, I am.
Would you read in the message, please, reading clerk?
March the 2nd, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 460, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 94, campaign finance reporting election periods. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 53, noes 5, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move concurrence on message number 460, Senate File 94. Ladies and gentlemen, all they did was make it better. They, over in the House, they made it the same as another campaign finance bill going through, so there wouldn't be any argument or misunderstanding if the two of them go through. The other one was that they changed the two-year period for the $25,000 back. I couldn't really argue with them on that because it gave you your choice of whether you could put it all into a primary or all into a general or split it up. But, Mr. President, what it did do was split up the primary, general, and special election into separate elections so that none of us would make that mistake again. Mr. Chairman, I ask that we vote yes on this concurrence.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File number 94, message 460, and that you vote aye. The chief clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson? Bebout? Burns? Case? Coe? Cooper? DeCaria? Dockstader? Esquibel? Geis? Hastert? Honeycutt? Jennings? Johnson? Landon? Larson? Martin? Massey? Meyer? Nicholas? Perkins? Peterson? Ross? Schiffer? Scott? Sessions? Townsend? Basie? Von Flatern? President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 23 ayes, 7 noes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate file number 94. Senator Massey, are you ready on message 459?
Yes, Mr. President.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
March the 2nd, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 459, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 49, psychologist licensure. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move message number 459 to Senate file number 49 and ask the body to vote aye. The House caught a couple of areas that we needed to clean up, and we forgot to do so over here and clarified one other area. On page 5, line 23, they found a dangling school in there and got rid of it. And on page 9, line 15, deals with a provision with regard to the number of years of supervised professional experience that a psychologist needed before getting full licensure. We had eliminated the requirement that it would be 1 year before graduation and 1 year after getting their doctoral degree. And they came back and offered a compromise. Essentially, it could be 2 years, either 2 years before or 2 years after, or a combination, which is fine. Page 9, line 16. They deleted that's part of the amendment I just mentioned was 916. Over on page 11, on line 19, they substituted or deleted an or and inserted an and. That needed to be done in order to conform with the provisions of the bill a little bit earlier here in the bill over on page, let's see, over on page 4. And finally, on page 19, line 7, they reinserted the definition for specialist in school psychology. That was inadvertently deleted in the drafting of the bill. We do need to have that definition in the bill. And they did delete 3327119, which goes back to the provision I just mentioned. Once you take out the or and put the and in, you don't need subsection A of 3327119, so they just deleted that from the bill. Urge concurrence, Mr. President.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, as I understand this, and correct me if I'm wrong, or I'm sure someone will, they also went on page 11, lines 8 through 16, and that, in effect, is the basis, I thought, of this licensure bill, that if you represent yourself as a psychologist, then you have to be licensed. And as I read this, I think they eliminated that. I hope I'm wrong, and we can discuss that.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. In continuing to read down further on that section, going down to subsection B, it essentially says the same thing. And unless exempt under WS 33-27-114, any person who represents himself as a psychologist and who engages in a practice of psychology in violation of his act, is so on and so forth, is guilty of a misdemeanor. So it essentially has already, it repeats what's in subsection A. It's a duplication, and that's the reason why subsection A is removed. And then further, going over to page 4 of the new language, subsection B on page 4, essentially restates that again. A person not otherwise exempt from this act is engaged in a practice of psychology when the person advertises or represents that he is authorized to practice psychology and performs any of the activities enumerated in the previous paragraph. So it restates in a couple of other areas exactly what's stated in subsection A, and therefore the House Labor Committee thought it was not necessary to have that duplication in the bill. I agree. Subsection B on page 11 and the new subsection B over on page 4 essentially states the same thing.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate file number 49 and that you vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel. Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Nicholas. Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
No.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
No.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Vasey.
No.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Nicholas, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 21 ayes, 9 noes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate file number 49. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, may I request that that bill be retained in the possession of the Senate briefly? I think there may be a technical defect in there that we may need to reconsider our vote on. It won't take us very long to sort it out.
Okay. Without objection, we'll retain that bill for the short while. Next is Senator Session. Are you ready on message number 461?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, I am.
The Chief Clerk, please read it in.
March 2nd, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 461, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 129, juvenile justice amendment. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 51, no 7, excuse 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. President, I would move for concurrence on message number 461 and ask you to vote aye. All they did was add two words, copies of, on page 2, line 4, and so it reads, after section, all copies of all charging documents, reports, or citations for cases provided in this subsection shall be forwarded to the district attorney prior to the filing of the charge, report, or citation in municipal or city court. So I think maybe that's what we sort of envisioned in the first place, what copies of those documents would be forwarded on, and so the original documents remained safe in the original court. And so what I would ask us to vote aye.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate file number 129, message 461, and that you vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Basie.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate file number 129. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, on the previous bill, Senate file 49, we had a quick caucus. I thought there was a technical defect in it. It turns out there isn't. They deleted something and then put that in the repealer, so we're fine.
Thank you. Signing of enrolled acts. This one that I already have. Okay, I was waiting for another copy. We have one more. I need to assign members of Joint Conference Committee for Message 467, reference to House Bill 114, Community Colleges Amendments. Co-chairman, Bebout and Von Flatern. Okay, now, signing of enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act number 56.
Senate Enrolled Act number 56 being original Senate file 26.
I am about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 56 being original Senate file number 26. Original Senate file number 26. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 57.
Senate Enrolled Act number 57 being original Senate file 28.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 57 being original Senate file number 28. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 58.
Senate Enrolled Act number 58 being original Senate file 54.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 58 being original Senate file number 54. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 59.
Senate Enrolled Act number 55 being original Senate file 101.
Senate Enrolled Act number 59 being original Senate file number 101. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 60.
Senate Enrolled Act number 60 being original Senate file 3.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 60 being original Senate file number 3. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 61.
Senate Enrolled Act number 61 being original Senate file 14.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 61, being original Senate file number 14. of so sign. Senate enrolled Act number 62.
Senate enrolled Act number 62 being original Senate file 34.
I'm about to sign Senate enrolled Act number 62 being original Senate file number 34. Of so sign. Senate enrolled Act number 63.
Senate enrolled Act number 63 being original Senate file 44.
I'm about to sign Senate enrolled Act number 63 being original Senate file number 44. So signed. Senate enrolled Act number 64.
Senate enrolled Act number 64 being original Senate file 102.
I'm about to sign Senate enrolled Act number 64 being original Senate file number 102. That's so signed. Senate enrolled Act number 65.
Senate enrolled Act number 65 being original Senate file 143.
I'm about to sign Senate enrolled Act number 65 being original Senate file 143. That's so signed. Senate enrolled Act number, Senate enrolled joint resolution number 2.
Senate enrolled joint resolution number 2 being original Senate joint resolution number 4.
I'm about to sign Senate enrolled joint resolution number 2 being original Senate joint resolution number 4. That's so signed. House Enrolled Act number 76.
House Enrolled Act number 76 being original House Bill 279.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 76 being original House Bill number 279. So signed. House Enrolled Act number 77.
House Enrolled Act number 77 being original House Bill number 134.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 77 being original House Bill number 134. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act number 78.
House Enrolled Act number 78 being original House Bill 183.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 78 being original House Bill number 183. So signed. House Enrolled Act number 79.
House Enrolled Act number 79 being original House Bill 236.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 79, being original House Bill 236. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act number 80.
House Enrolled Act number 80, being original House Bill number 255.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 80. Being original House Bill 255. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act number 81.
House Enrolled Act number 81 being original House Bill number 281.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 81 being original House Bill number 281. So signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Any announcements? You've heard the motion that the Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Mr. President.
Oh, Senator Bevout.
Your conference committee on House Bill 288 will meet at 8 a.m. in the morning in S-18.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yes, Mr. President, I call the attention of the body to the all the materials that you received in regard to interim topics, and particularly I would like to speak to the chairman of each of these committees that Chairman Hines advises that the council will meet at 8 a.m. on Wednesday, March 4th in room 302 in order to discuss these topics. Further note, it's also noted that the previous directive from the president and speaker to the committee chairs, the chairman will not be asked to attend the council meeting unless specifically requested to attend to answer questions from the council. And further, I would say, now that you've received these materials and had an opportunity to look at those enclosed written proposals, please advise the president if you have significant concerns with any of the committee proposals and wish to have the chairman of a particular committee and those council meeting to answer questions, so you may be called upon in order to come forth to do that. But again, I would just call your attention to these interim topics and state again that the meeting will be 8 a.m. Wednesday, March 4th, room 302.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, your Joint Committee for House Bill 97, Weights and Measures, will meet tomorrow at 1:30 in the House Agriculture Committee room to see if we can resolve that issue.
You've heard the motion that the Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, Tuesday, March 3rd. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate is adjourned.